Okay, this is going to be the audio recording that accompanies Chapter 22, the Lymphatic System and Body Defenses. I'm going to have two separate recordings for this one. Part one will be the lymphatic system, and part two will be the body defenses. Way back in July when I introed this course, I told you that the population knows plenty about some of the systems and not much about the other. If you ask people about digestive system, or cardiovascular, or muscular, or nervous system, they could tell you some pretty good things. But if you ask them about the job of the lymphatic system, you're going to get some dopey looks on their faces. So we'll try to undopify some of you during this broadcast. Another thing I told you way back in the day was that I think we described this system that it mops up fluids that have leaked out of the circulatory system. Now, I said that this is a normal function. When we learned about blood vessels, capillary beds in particular, we talked about on the arterial end how you had leakage going on, and on the venial end you had reabsorption going on, but that the two numbers weren't quite the same. You had a little more leakage than you had reabsorption. And at that time I said, we'll talk about the lymphatic system later. We're going to talk about how that last few percent are mopped up, and that's what we're going to be covering now. So I've divided the notes up. It says two parts under lymphatic system, the vessels and then the tissues and organs for the lymphatic system. Lymphatic vessels are going to be the tubes that are going to originally collect that fluid and then transport it eventually back to the circulatory system so that that fluid can re-enter the blood. Now, before we get there, we want to clean it up real good. If there's an infection in one part of the body, we don't want to spread it around everywhere else. So there's little scrubbers along the way that we'll be sending this fluid through. By the way, throughout this, this fluid that is leaked out but not reabsorbed, we're going to call it, when it re-enters the lymphatic capillaries, we're going to now call it lymph. So this fluid has these different names. It's plasma when it's in the blood, it's interstitial fluid when it's between the cells, and now it's going to be called lymph on the way back. So on your notes packet, under lymphatic vessels, it says, first bullet, as a normal function, water and nutrients leak out at blood capillaries, joining the interstitial fluid. If you have forgotten how or why that happens, you can refer back to page 724 from the blood vessels chapter to look at that crazy drawing we did where we talked about hydrostatic pressures and osmotic pressures and why it goes out in one part and when it goes back in the other. It's pretty cool. Next bullet says, most gets absorbed, but not all. As I said, there's a few percent that are not fully reabsorbed. Third bullet says, something doesn't mop it up, edema will result. And edema is when those tissues get loaded with the fluid that's not being reabsorbed, they swell up. So edema is swelling. Sometimes we want this to happen on purpose. Swelling is a natural part of the healing process. Next bullet says, the lymphatic capillaries are designed to absorb this fluid. And this fluid, as I told you, is called lymph. The vessels of lymphatic capillaries have a unique construction where the cells kind of overlap on the surface. And the reason it's built this way is that it allows the fluid to leak into the lymphatic capillary, but it can't go back the same way. It can't go back into the tissues. Once it's in the pipe to stay. In addition to that, we're going to find that there are valves within those pipes to keep the fluid moving in one direction as it moves back towards the blood circulatory system. Next bullet, fluid enters the lymphatic capillaries and is carried away. Next bullet, along with the fluids are debris and germs. So anything that's going on out in the tissue is going to be picked up here. This lymph and anything bad that it's carrying is going to go to lymph nodes, and that's where these impurities are going to be filtered out. We have a special section notes just on those notes, but I'll just tell you that much for now. At the bottom of the first page of notes is a sequence of events, and we go from small to large, and you can read it. It starts out with lymphatic capillaries. If you would go to page 765 and look at pictures A and B in the book, it'll describe the construction and the relative size of these capillaries next to blood capillaries. And look at the labels for it and the directions that fluids are moving. While you're on that page, if you look at figure 22.1, the whole body drawing, you can see all of these parts of the sequence, you can see them all labeled throughout the body. And I want you to take a minute or two and look through that at each of the labels. But you can see that the lymphatic capillaries join larger structures called collecting vessels, and that those collecting vessels then empty into lymph nodes. Those lymph nodes are going to scrub and purify it of any germs or debris. And the fluid coming out enters lymph trunks, and then that goes into lymph ducts. If you turn your book to page 767 and look at these lymphatic ducts for a second, if you look at the main drawing B on 767, you'll see the structures. There are two lymphatic ducts that enter the major veins. And you'll notice on the small picture to the left that they don't drain an equal portion of the body, that one only drains a fourth of the body, the other one three-fourths. It's just, there's nothing important about it. It's just odd because normally we think of the body being symmetrical, left and right being equal, but that's certainly not the case. It's not an important fact. It's just something I saw and thought was weird. On the next page, we'll turn our attention to the lymph nodes now, and you might want to have the book open to page 771 at this time. It's a nice cross-section of a lymph node. First bullet says that there are hundreds throughout the body, and there are. There's no exact number, like you know you have two kidneys and such, but it's just always described in literature as hundreds. I imagine it varies from person to person to some degree. Think of them as 1 to 2 centimeters in size. Lymph nodes are typically up to 1 centimeter, but can range to 2 centimeters when inflamed. The second bullet says that there are large clusters of them found in the inguinal, axillary, and cervical regions. And these are the ones that are closest to the surface and can be felt when they're swollen especially. Third bullet says nodes are filled with macrophages. So what happens is as this lymph is being brought back from the tissues, if it does have germs in it, there are macrophages there that will grab and consume those guys and present the antigen to lymphocytes. So we can start antibody production if need be. Next bullet, also contain lymphocytes that the lymph must pass by as it moves through the node. So next, nodes swell when battling infection. As I said, 1 centimeter might be more typical size, 2 centimeters if you're infected or if there was even a cancer forming inside. Next bullet, they're covered with a fibrous capsule and have trabeculae inside. Now, this is kind of an interesting thing. If you're on page 771, you can see these parts identified. The trabeculae reminds me, when I'm trying to describe the purpose of it, if you remember this great game when you were a kid called Kerplunk, you'd take, 20 or 30 little plastic rods and run them through this tube, and then you put all these marbles on top, and every kid took turns pulling out a plastic pipe until the marble started to slip through. Well, I think of the trabeculae as kind of like the plastic rods. So in the inside of the lymph node, and they're all covered with white blood cells. So any fluid that's passing through is going to run into these trabeculae, and it's going to come in physical contact with these macrophages, and they're just going to be destroyed. Last bullet, lymphocytes originate in red bone marrow, but proliferate further in the nodes. So once they are in the nodes, they can still increase their numbers there. The next section is other lymphoid organs, and you see listed spleen, thymus, tonsils, and Peyer's patches. So the spleen, it's kind of like, yeah, you hear it in like movies, and you know, people make fun of a spleen because no one really knows what it is, and it's got kind of a funny sound to it. But basically, for our purposes, it's the largest collection of lymphoid tissue in the whole body. So it's going to be loaded with white blood cells again. First bullet says destroys worn out RBCs. If you remember, red blood cells don't have a nucleus, and because of that, they have no maintenance for their surface, and they run into friction along the way. Even as smooth as it is in there, they still run in over time, and they start to get tattered. And fuzzy red blood cells are bad red blood cells. So as they move through the spleen, they will be detected, their texture or surface will be detected by white blood cells, and they're pulled out of the system and destroyed. And parts of them are discarded, and the valuable parts are recycled, and we'll talk more about that in the next chapter. Second bullet says stores blood that's released after heavy bleeding. And what this can be is it's such a large volume of blood going through this organ that if you have blood loss, the spleen can actually squeeze out a bunch of blood to add to the system. How much exactly, I don't know, but it is a backup for dropping blood pressure if possible. Third bullet says filters blood for debris and bacteria. And I already said, because of those white blood cells and everything passing through it is going to be detected. And remember, this is for blood running through, so it's going to be filtering that. Great amount of blood goes through the spleen. That's why a torn spleen can be kind of a dangerous thing. Last bullet for that one, located in the upper left abdomen, wrapping around the superior part of the stomach. Actually, I'm going to have you add a bullet to this. I want you to also add that it initiates an immune response by having B and T cells reading the antigens that they discover in the blood. So even if there's an infection far away, the antigen of that infection in the blood can be detected at the spleen, and then an immune response can be initiated from there. For the thymus gland, when we talked about the endocrine system earlier, we talked about different glands that secrete hormones. This is that dopey one that it's just behind your sternum. Its peak of function is during your youth. By the time you reach puberty, it starts to degrade, and its basic job, as I described then, was to educate your immune system. It produces a hormone called thymosin, which is actually a collection of hormones that aid in programming lymphocytes. Next up are tonsils. And every kid in this room has heard of tonsils. You probably had tonsillitis before. But basically, you're going to have a lot of opportunity for bacteria to enter your mouth between, you know, what you eat and drink and just touching your face and everything. You're going to have a lot of bacteria enter. And their job isn't to rid the body of bacteria by any means, but to sample it. So these are, first bullet says, small masses of lymphatic tissue that form a ring around the throat. So they're going to be in the pharynx. And as bacteria is moving through your throat, they're going to be sampling it. Second bullet says, trap and sample bacteria entering the throat. And finally, some of them, when they do get overwhelmed, become inflamed and very painful, and that's tonsillitis. If that happens to you a lot, you can get a tonsillectomy where they remove those tonsils, which is the case in the old days. It was done a lot more than it is today. Like when I was a kid, everyone got their tonsils out. I think that's how doctors back then put their kids through college or something. I'm not sure about that. Next. Final one is Peyer's patches. They're similar to tonsils in their structure, but they are found in the walls of the intestines. They're much, much smaller, and they're found throughout the intestine. Again, sampling bacteria as it moves through.